Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Unfriending is a dark comedy of manners about a group of friends that includes Blake and his girlfriend May. Their dinner party is the cover story for a life intervention that focuses on the outcast of the group, Isaac, where the friend group tell him all the reasons that he's become a burden to them and society in general, and that he really should just kill himself. The film, again, is called Unfriending, and we're joined today by the co-directors as well as co-writers of the Unfriending, and that would be Jason Butler and Brett Butler. To both of you, welcome to Film School Radio.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. What inspired this? What was the sort of catalyst for you to, there's the undercurrent of the world we live in social media that sort of informs what is happening amongst these people. But what was the inspiration for this?
Yeah, kind of. I'd say the seed for us was we were living during the pandemic, and you know, you're very isolated and just kind of connecting to the world through social media and seeing how people were interacting, especially in the comment sections of various social media, and how terrible people were to each other in terms of people had different viewpoints or anything like that. People would just go so far and like, they would be like, you should die. Your views are terrible. You should die. And so we were looking at that, and we saw like friends of our own who, you know, friendships ended by, you know, varying viewpoints on the pandemic and stuff like that. So we had the idea of what would that look like in real life? People actually talking and how ugly it is, and try and like hold a microscope to the way people are interacting.
Yeah, and basically that, and dealing with sort of the cancel culture in general that was rampant at that time. Like Brett said, everything seemed to be black or white. Everyone was taking a stand and very, very divisive on varying opinions of the time. And it was just like, well, I can't be your friend anymore. That's it. You know, heaven forbid you have a different opinion on things. So yeah, we just really like the idea of having people say the things that we're seeing in the comments section to each other in real life, and perhaps, you know, put a reflection up to society and stimulate that thought. Like, well, what if, listen, these are the things you're saying to each other. Would you actually say this to the person in face-to-face situations, and how ugly that could look and funny?
Well, yeah. And to that point, it really requires finding the right people to play these parts. I think this cast is really instrumental in kind of bringing this idea to life. What was the first thing you wanted to accomplish once you wrote the script and you feel like you had a handle on where you wanted to go with it? What was the first thing you do? Did you look for a cast, or what was that next step for you?
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of, I guess, lucky, because during the pandemic, there was a lot of out of work actors. You know, there wasn't a lot going on. And we put out, we connected with a casting director, Jules Fitzsimmons, and she put it out there. And we had, I think it was 400 auditions for the eight roles.
Wow.
So that was a big thing, putting those people together. We did our first table read a couple weeks before filming, and they all just really got on together and connected and worked hard with each other on the performances and rehearsals beforehand. So we were very, very lucky.
I think from the ground up, even the script was tailored in terms of the amount of the cast, and it was very limited, no background. Because of the rules here in Toronto, at least, you couldn't have sort of more than 12 people at the time on set. You know, that was not allowed. So, you know, we tailored it to that. We knew that there was, like Brett said, a lot of out of work actors, and we live in Toronto, which is a huge metropolitan city. I mean, there's over 4 million people, and that seems like a lot of them are into acting. So we knew sort of at a base level that we were going to have an opportunity to really find the specific characters that we thought would fit. We were right. So we took our time, and we just found these actors that really, really got the role and understood their part in the whole ensemble.
Yeah. And I think We were looking too into like theater actors because we were shooting so fast. We shot the whole thing in 7 days. So we needed them to know the entire script and ready to go. And we shot it in chronological order. So it was like almost like recording a live play.
I can see why theater actors would be, in this particular case, a really good choice. And I think, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's a couple of very key people that really kicked this thing off. Blake, who is Sean Meldrum. He's obviously someone who has to embody a lot of different agendas going forward. And it's a fine line between not liking him and not wanting to look at him anymore. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? There's like, there's something that he managed to navigate in all of this where he was always a watchable character, an interesting character. He kept it. And I'm just curious to the degree that once you're sort of underway with a character like this and its importance to the film, do you make modifications to the script, or did you kind of lock this in and feel like that's what it was and you had, and he had what he had to do? Or just kind of curious the sort of give and take between an actor, and especially in something that is so dependent upon the actors and their ability to convey these things.
Yeah, it was basically word for word from the script. And it was nice when the actors came on board. They were talking about, usually with independent films, they do a lot of improv to elevate the material. And they were all, to each one was like, we don't need to do that with this script. It is so tight and rock solid. So they just worked on the characters, but not in terms of like the dialogue. Pretty just locked and loaded.
And it was such a tight shooting schedule. And I think they sort of inherently knew that, you know, just being able to know all your lines and deliver it, we didn't really have time to sort of, you know, deviate from the script in terms of how much we were trying to shoot per day, per page on any given day was around 15 pages a day, which is, you know, quite a lot. Yeah. So it's intense just to have all those words that were written down for them. I think, but they really embraced it. And within that context, they brought a lot of nuance to it that Brett and I really appreciated. And, you know, you sort of discover it yourselves as you're watching. You're like, wow, they really dug deep on this and really sort of pulled on these lines. You know, it was great to watch.
Yeah, we had a theatrical release here in Toronto a couple months back. And during the Q&A, the audience was asking Sean, who played Blake, and Alex, who played Isaac, about their relationship. And they were relaying how after the table read, they were like, this is going to be really dark. And they just went out and got drunk together and really connected. So it was really cool to hear.
Yeah, you're right. That could definitely kind of wear you out, because he's pretty unrelenting. And well, there's a lot of different elements in the sort of the pressure on Isaac. And Isaac, that's, by the way, Alex Stone plays Isaac, the man who was the focus of their attention in this film. And that is a difficult role as well, to be as kind of unmoored in his character as he is. It feels like he's hearing these things, and it feels like he believes it to be true to an extent. Yeah, it's a tough role. I don't know if I'm explaining it very well, but.
It was definitely like another kind of high wire act for similar to Sean playing Blake, where you wanted him to feel like he was, you know, kind of a depressed, lonely, down on his luck person, but you also wanted the audience to like him and relate to him and feel connected. So when those words were being said to him, that the audience would feel the impact of it rather than say, agreeing with the characters.
That character Isaac was probably the trickiest to cast. You know, we saw a few people, but Alex really stood out at the end of the day. We're like, he's got that quality, and he's probably the least like his character in real life. Like, Alex is a very sort of outgoing, you know, adventurous kind of guy.
Motorcycle driving.
Leather jacket wearing motorcycle driving kind of guy. Like, he's very not like the character at all. So, which makes it, you know, all the more impressive. But like Brett said, he had to tread that fine line. You had to believe this guy was socially oblivious to certain things, that he wouldn't even pick up on cues that people, you know, are kind of annoyed by him, or and they don't like him. But you know, the audience has to like him. They have to root for him at the end of the day. So he did a really brilliant job at it, for sure.
I thought he did too. So I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Jason Butler and Brett Butler. They are the co-directors of the film Unfriending, as I said at the beginning, also co-writers, co-producers, and co-editors. Am I leaving? And co-cinematographers. Wow, this was a small set, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. It was essentially Brett and myself, our sound person, and then Brett's wife, Allie, who was production design. And yeah, that was it. It was basically four people and then the cast.
Yeah, because you got eight people and you couldn't have more than 12. So
that's right.
The fact that you have been doing this now since about 2005, when your first film came out, have you been always worked together in terms of the film projects that you have been working on? Has this always been a brother relationship over this?
Yeah, since the get-go, it never occurred to us not to. It's, you know, working with your brother, you have a sort of a built-in support system, a built-in sort of motivational system. You have an implicit artistic shorthand and an artistic trust where, you know, in a lot of cases, you would have to build that with somebody else, with your writer or with your director or with your editors. And sort of we have, because we grew up watching the same films and we have the same sensibilities, it helps define our voice and it helps define how we want to get things done in the most, effective and efficient manner. So, and keep us on track. So it's sort of we're a checks and balances kind of crew that way.
Yeah, and I think with the shorthand, you don't have to worry about bruising egos or, you know, tiptoe around anything. You can be very straight and know that no matter what is said, we're both trying to make the best art possible. And that no matter what, at the end of the day, we're still going to be brothers. So, you know, it's not like people can just, either one of us can just check out.
Right. So, and it's beneficial because, I mean, as you can imagine, the industry is full of a lot of ego already. Part of our job as producers, the producer part of it, and somewhat the director, is to manage egos and manage people's just on set, how they are, and if they get hurt or if they're sensitive. And everyone sort of likes to be communicated in their own way, and we have to discover that. And even in that context, so Brett and I have different communication styles, and they'll resonate differently with different actors, and we can identify that, and that sort of simplifies that process as well. It always seemed to work, and I never really considered it doing otherwise. It's hard enough to make a film, so it's nice to have somebody else to go into battle with all the time.
Yeah, and this was definitely like a throwback style from when we first got involved in independent filmmaking, where we were wearing all the hats and doing everything. And it was like during the pandemic, when we had been waiting on financing for another much higher budget film for, I think, like 5 years. And there was that point too, as well, like during the pandemic, we're like, we just want to get back to making films as opposed to waiting for financing. And just, you know, with the advent of technology and what you can do on a small budget and with these cameras and in post-production, we're like, it's time where we can do that again. We can wear all the hats and we don't have to wait for a green light. We can green light ourselves.
Most of your films been comedies. How would you characterize the sort of the genre that you're most comfortable working in?
I think dark comedies is where we, I guess, would sit in. We do like to have dramatic, have social commentary in our films, but we do find that comedy is such a good way to open people up for the gut punch,
for the sort of subtextual messaging or even the overt messaging we're trying to get through there. But I'd say we started really definitely with like sort of dark comedy character relationship stuff. And we sort of, you know, broadened our sort of scope in some senses. And then also come back to it another way where we're like, okay, now we really, you know, you get older, you evolve yourself, you form more opinions, you have more experiences, and then you just want to incorporate it. So I think our strength has always been like the ability to make people laugh and unsure if they should be laughing in that uncomfortable kind of way. Am I a bad person for laughing at this kind of thing? And we've always enjoyed that. That's the kind of stuff we grew up enjoying ourselves. Yeah. So we just wanted to be part of that conversation.
Well, this veers into the psychological or drama in an area for this film, for Unfriending. It definitely goes dark, for sure, in a lot of different ways and a lot of different times in the course of the telling of the story. 100% on Rotten Tomatoes as we sit here today. Congratulations on that. Yeah.
Thanks. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. You never know when you sort of put your baby out into the world, how people are going to respond. So especially something like this, which, you know, does sort of plunder through some various dark terrain and psychological areas that, you know, might even trigger people. So you never really know, but I think everyone seems to get it. You know, yeah. It's worth the ride. And sometimes you might be a little squeamish watching, but I think we sort of, you know, deliver on the promise at the end.
Yeah, it's been interesting traveling to festivals and stuff with the film and sitting in with audiences where they're laughing so hard and so much. And then that intervention occurs and you just kind of feel the whole tension in the audience where it's just completely silent. You know, people are like leaning in and like, whoa, where did we just get taken to?
And I think for me, it comes from the humor in the film didn't feel forced. It didn't feel like this was the part of the film I'm supposed to be laughing at. It was just it's felt like a very natural within the context of the characters. You got the humor from that. And I think that helps a lot in setting up the other part of it.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Michael Pearson, who played Barkley, was definitely very, very much like his character. It was amazing. We were on set. We're like, we didn't know where Michael ended and Barkley started.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that right?
Life imitating art, art imitating life. We weren't sure which came first in regards to Michael Pearson, well, which is great again. Yeah. So it's like great casting. So, you know, so much of direction is if you get the cast correct, it makes your life as a director, you know, much easier. Because you're just tweaking nuance and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's what Hitchcock basically believed was. He said once the film was cast, once his job was essentially just to make sure that everything went according to plan. But he felt very confident once you had the right cast. And that makes sense.
Robert Altman as well with his big ensemble. Same thing. Yeah. Directing is 90% casting. So yeah. And then says don't screw it up. So
yeah. He's one of my favorite film directors of all time is Robert Altman. He doesn't get talked about enough to me.
Agreed. Agreed. Yeah.
I think his work, it was fantastic stuff. Well, again, this is your first release into the United States, right? Do I have that correct? This is your first US release, theatrical release. Well, yeah, congratulations again. It's funny. I'm glad you mentioned Michael Pearson as Barkley. He was a catalyst for a lot of the humor. I felt like he really was kind of the guy that you could count on to say something that was going to set people off in one direction or another. And the cast again, I compliments on getting the right cast and all the best moving forward with this. And I'm sure there'll be more to come, more films. And I look forward to more from you. So thank you very much. The film again is called Unfriending, and we've been talking with the co-directors, co-producers, co-writers, co-editors, co-cinematographers of this wonderful film, and that would be Jason Butler and Brett Butler. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure. You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.